This is Sandra Sims with StepByStepFundraising.com, and today I have on the line with me Mark Pittman. And Mark is a professional fundraiser. He is currently the pastor of the Vineyard Church of Waterville, Maine. He's also the director of the Foundation of Inland Hospital. Prior to moving to Waterville, Mark coached fundraising executives and small business owners. He loves asking people for money and is fond of saying, "Fundraising is an extreme sport." Mark still offers seminars through Central Maine Community College, Charity University, and his own Creating Donor Evangelist audio program. Thanks for joining us today, Mark.
It's great to be here.
Well, thank you. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got started in the fundraising area?
One person asked me this once, and I told him that I used to play fundraiser as a preschooler, and he always wanted to be a fundraiser, and I saw this guy's jaw dropping, and then I said, no, I got hungry. Job. I got married right out of college, worked in admissions at the college I graduated from, and the last ceiling there, did a lateral move over to fundraising, and found out I really liked asking people for money and keeping relationships with people year after year, whereas admissions, come, you know, whatever the deadline was, May 1st, June 1st, whatever, you didn't see the kids again. Whether they chose the college or not, working with being an extrovert, I loved working in relationships that could grow over the years.
And so why do you say that you see fundraising as an extreme sport? I've always wondered that. I saw that on your site, and I thought, extreme sport? What does that mean?
There are two experiences that sum this up for me. The first one was what hooked me in fundraising. In Gordon College, I moved over into the development office and had a very experienced gentleman that was still there to this day and still a mentor of mine, but he kept saying, I'm going to take you on a call, I'm going to take you on some calls so you can get some practice, so you can see what we do. And he had developed such good relationships with most of these donors that it seemed kind of odd to have an apprentice come along, because it's a personal relationship. It's not, you're not fixing a car where you can have someone come along and see how the engine's put together. So he just kept not doing it. So finally I went out, and my first ask, first professional fundraising ask, was for $100,000. And just, you know, finding the woman's house and getting there and then having the conversation. I had done all the homework. Well, not all of it, it turned out, but a lot of the homework that I thought reasonable enough to believe that although this was high, there was reason that she might consider it. And I just had an adrenaline rush when I finally asked it. I had the wherewithal, I don't know how, as a verbal extrovert, I don't know how I had the wherewithal to shut up after I asked it and just let her answer, which is that. So that was that first adrenaline rush. It was a no.
It was a no?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
It was a pretty convoluted ask, but still I got hooked from that point on.
Uh-huh.
That's a good story for another time, I could tell you. But the second one that anchored it for me was when I was in alumni relations at a prep school in Long Island. And it was very bizarre to travel across country to do donor cultivation, which, cause I'm still a development guy, so I saw it as donor cultivation, and then to come back from the trip without the check in my pocket to at least cover my expenses. That was something that I didn't understand about alumni relations, but I grew to appreciate. We're in California, though, and the head of school, director of development, and myself were meeting with an alum. The head made $250,000 ask in another very convoluted way that could have been, if you didn't know the person well enough, might have been seen as a little bit offensive, involved planned gifts. But the adrenaline rush that I got from that, from him asking the question and then seeing the donor say, no, but this is how I want to give this much money for you, and then seeing the headmaster say that doesn't fit in our vision in a way that the donor felt good about. I feel like the headmaster was saying no to him. And it went from $250,000 gift to $25,000 for a couple of years, but it fit the vision of the school and didn't take away from where the school was going. And to see all that so clearly, again, it was another adrenaline rush, and I realized I just love asking for money. It is a lot safer than bungee jumping. I've never heard of anybody dying for asking for money. So
that's true. I haven't heard that either. So
I've had somebody die just before I went, but it's not because of my ask.
So you've talked a lot about making personal calls and making an ask for large donations. If an organization hasn't done any type of personal relationship building with their donors before, how should they get started with that process?
That is a great question. I just had a call last week from an organization that needed to raise $600,000 in the next 4 weeks. And I told her she was sort of like a cardiac patient that was going in for open heart surgery. Asking, how does oatmeal help prevent heart disease? It doesn't work that way. So if there's an organization that needs to start developing relationships, it should be. It is all about relationships.
Mm-hmm.
The two things, especially for fundraising, the first one is getting the story, crafting the story of the nonprofit. Why is the nonprofit important, and why is that organization doing, how is it doing it uniquely from what other organizations are doing? I think the nonprofit sector in our country is so strong now. There are hundreds of thousands of nonprofits that are created every year, if I have my statistics correct. And that's good. The government knows that nonprofits do things better with money than they do, so that's why they get tax breaks. But each of us need to, just like any business, we need to define ourselves with our unique selling proposition, as a business term. What makes us different? What makes us do something remarkably well? And doing it in a way that doesn't slam anybody else, but in a way that definitely highlights our differences and why donors can trust their money to us. There's a tool on my website that is called the Rule of Threes, which is just a real simple way to create a succinct 3 points, that your three attributes of your nonprofit that you want to keep talking about without it sounding canned.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard of an elevator pitch?
Yes.
All right. There's the whole idea of having if you're in an elevator with Bill Gates and you have 10 seconds to intrigue him with what you do, he says, what do you do? What's your 10-second pitch, and then what's your 30-second pitch? And the problem with that, if you go to any networking event, is that they sound canned. I have a can of Spam on my desk just to remind me to not sound canned. It just is not what people, you can see people glaze over. What's neat about the Rule of Threes is that there, you can make sure you're sending this, talking about the same three attributes, but it becomes a living, breathing, sort of organic way of describing your organization. Once you know that, then, and you have the board be part of that conversation, you can't do that on your own. You need other people and telling you what makes you unique. Then you go to the board, and really, I think starting with the board is so important in fundraising. If the board's not invested financially in the organization, there's not very much incentive for the rest of the community to be, or however you define the community that you're serving. And especially if it's a new organization, to right out of the, whatever you put in the seed of an organization is going to be the fruit that will bear for the years to come. So if you have a brand new board, making sure that they all agree to some financial commitment. In a perfect world, every board member would be giving at least $1,000 to the organization that they're serving on a board to. And that probably made some people's eyebrows raise, but that's the kind of commitment that you want to see. It's $84 a month. It's an expensive phone bill. There's other utility terms
mm-hmm.
that you could compare it to, but that really illustrates the type of donor that nonprofits you want to generate in the future. Those are people that are committed in more than just a passing fancy.
Right, and if they're committed with their checkbook, they are committed, you know, in their actions.
That's right. That's a good
yeah.
point. And what you don't want to do is come across as saying you're not committed until you pull out the checkbook.
Yeah.
Because that's not true. It's harder to quantify the blood, sweat, and tears that boards often pour into the nonprofit dollars. But there is something that drives home the fact that the boarders get a financial responsibility for the well-being of the nonprofit. And
mm-hmm.
if they're passing policies, they need to be willing to pull out the checkbook if it doesn't work and cover that.
Yeah.
And so I think that helps bring a good, just a good reminder and a good ownership to the organization.
So how would be a good way to facilitate that discussion with the board? Whether it's a new board or maybe it's a board that's been there a while and some of the people are not in sync with maybe the rest of the organization. How do you start that conversation?
And it's particularly, well, either way it can be difficult because you know, if you're the executive director or the head of the organization, you know these people. So it can be uncomfortable. I'm a big fan of having a facilitator come in and doing a board retreat. There are any number of good ones out there, and talk with the person first. See if it's going to be a half day, a whole day vision, because this could be all part and parcel with your creating your crafting your vision, creating your brand, telling your story. but have make sure that they know what are the things that you want to get out of the day as the executive director of the organization. And I would, if they're not willing to say that money is one of the things that boards in the 21st century need to be committing to the organization, I would keep shopping around until you find someone that is. It's a lot easier. I know from personal experience, having been on both sides of the fence, it's a lot easier for me at not being part of a board to come in and say, everybody needs to ante up. And it's not, you know, I'm sorry if that sounds crass. I'm sorry if this is going to offend you, but this is the reality. Your organization is worth the investment. You've already shown that with your time. We need that you to show that with your checkbook, too.
Mm-hmm.
I was just giving a seminar on boards, and one nonprofit had brought their board. And it was very interesting to watch the executive director's face fill with glee and then immediately cap because she didn't want to look too gleeful in front of her board members. But if having a facilitator come in is not an option, another way to do it could be reading a book like Max Dupree, Call to Serve. I think it's less than 100 pages. It's about less than 10 bucks on Amazon. And it's a series of letters he wrote to a new college president about board work. And one of the things he talks about is the four W's you look for in a board member: work, wisdom, wealth, and witness. You want a board board members that will do either two of the four: work, wisdom, wealth, or witness. The witness would be being an ambassador. The wealth, obviously, is giving money. Working is just what it sounds like. And the wisdom is the advice and the capacity that this person's built in other areas of their life. I would posit that you need the wealth to be one of the two, which is nice because it does two things. One, it makes it one of the two, but it also makes it so that if someone that's just wealthy and is not going to be invested in the organization doesn't necessarily qualify as a board member if you're looking for two out of the four.
So as far as wealth, though, that's relative. Someone doesn't have to be particularly wealthy as far as a major donor to be on the board, but if they're going to at least give somewhat to the organization, would you say that would be true?
Right. Every organization is different. And some boards have requirements about certain seats have to go to certain demographics or certain groups in the community.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all sorts of different caveats around this. That's why you need something that's personally structured. Some boards will feel more comfortable. My story is the one I know the best, so that's why I tell it a lot, because I've been around enough things that I've heard enough good stories from speakers that I found out weren't true. But right now I'm being solicited to be part of a founding board for a small theater. And this person, this director, is a friend who was also in my board seminar. So she knows what she's supposed to be asking. And it's fascinating to be on the receiving end because she's not comfortable with a specific dollar amount. And she knows the people that she's asking. So to get to your point, she's going to ask for a board member to give at some level, which is better than not asking at all. And I guess, you know, Sandra, I'd stress for your listeners that I would really encourage them to consider it being a dollar amount, not a gift in kind. Board members are very generous with their time and services, and it's a lot easier for independent business owners to be able to give a gift in kind of something that their expertise is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's wonderful, and we need to be grateful for that because that it really helps our nonprofit. But there should be, in addition to that, there should be some sort of check or stock transfer that's happening because you want to build that habit. As your organization grows, you want to be sure that grows with it. It's probably best for the board, if you have a champion on your board that is willing to talk about money, to then pass a resolution and figure out what's comfortable for the organization to consider. Because some boards may not want it. You don't want only people that can give $1,000. You may want people for other skill sets. Homeless organizations may want homeless people on this board they want some of the clients. There's all sorts of different reasons. And another way, I just remembered that some boards do this, is that to give or get $1,000. So they're responsible either to give it themselves or to introduce people to the organization that will donate that. The only thing you have to figure out then is once they've donated, if I introduce somebody to the two $500 donors to the organization this year, do I have to do that again next year? Or do those people count every year because they wouldn't be giving anyway? And that's an individual organizational choice that has to be made too.
I could say there's some interesting qualities to asking someone to go out and solicit the $1,000, because then they're gaining the more experience and the skills of asking, and they're being an ambassador at the same time. So I could see how that would be helpful as well.
That's a great point.
So as far as knowing how much to request, you talked about how much to request of the board and how that can be variable, but you should ask for a certain amount usually. How about whenever you're going out on calls or you're, maybe it's a direct mail campaign and you're asking for membership levels. How do you know how much to request?
That's a great, great question, because I find people either not asking for a specific dollar amount, which is almost a waste of time, and I find some other people that are asking for such an out-of-the-ballpark range as far as the donor's concerned that it does damage to the organization's
mm-hmm.
perception in their eyes. Is it all right if I take you through the four-step process I have for asking people for money?
Sure, that'd be great.
I call it the get real process. I'm a Gen Xer. I like getting real.
Okay.
I don't think we have to have any smokes and mirrors. I think donors deserve our authenticity. So the four steps are research, engage, ask, and then live, like, or love the person, irregardless of their response. Research, engage, ask, and like the person anyway. So real. The way you know how much to request would be doing the research first. Tools like Google are incredible. If you stick a person's name in quotes, I call it a glam search if you do it on yourself. It's fascinating what is out there that's public information that pulls up. If you type Mark Pittman in quotes into Google, you'll find out that there's a B-grade movie actor who's done movies similar to Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. I think he's most recently in one about the Charles Manson or something.
and that's not you. That's not the Mark Pittman.
No, I'm, yeah.
Okay.
That's quite popular claim. Fortunately, over the years, I've been able to make it so that half of my sites show up also in the top 50 hits that come up on Google, but I still haven't been able to beat him yet. But finding out about donors that way, you can see what organizations they're part of, what boards they happen to be listed on, if the boards are listed on people's websites. There's also prospect screening services. There are a number of reputable firms that do this that have pay for subscriptions to databases that are subscription-based databases, and they can draw. It's all public information, but they can quantify for you. Those are usually expensive services. $20,000, I've heard, is not abnormal if you have 20,000 records, a dollar record. And most nonprofits, especially starting out, don't have that. But whatever your research is, those are some tools you can use. I also like having peer rating systems. I wasn't comfortable with this when I first got into fundraising, but as I've been in the field, it's interesting to see that people that are philanthropic know who the other philanthropic people are, especially in a region. They're able to know where people give to and how much they might give to, and they're used to asking, often are used to answering and asking these questions.